Hello, beautiful beings, and thank you for joining us for our fifth episode of Just Being. I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Nikki. Today we're going to be talking to you about the importance of nutrition in creating a healthy and happy mind and body. We will share our own relationships with food and then be joined by our first ever guest, which is very exciting.
Food makes up a massive part of our day-to-day lives, and with everything going on in the world at the moment, it's now more important than ever to give our bodies and immune systems the best support we can. Every day we have the choice of foods that heal us or those that harm us.
I mean, to me, food is everything. Usually my whole day revolves around it. As soon as lunch is done, I'm looking forward to dinner, but that doesn't necessarily mean I make the best choices with it.
I'm the same. I've always loved food and I would be the first in line for seconds at lunchtime when I was at primary school. I remember actually running to the queue when seconds was called out. Back then, though, I would have eaten anything and everything. About 8 years ago, I was suffering with anxiety and I started my healing journey using Reiki and meditation. As I started to rebalance and tune in with my mind, body and soul on a regular basis, I became aware of how I hadn't been treating any of them very well over the years. I went vegetarian overnight and started to eat as natural and organic as I could. After about 1 month, I noticed a massive rise in my energy levels as well as a drop in my anxiety levels. Nutrition is now up there for me with meditation as one of the biggest influences of my mood and energy.
That's so good. I've always been stubbornly against getting too heavily into watching what I eat, as in all honesty, I have struggled with eating disorders over the years, and a high focus on food can quickly turn into a bit of an obsession for me. But in recent years, I found it really helpful to change that focus from the relationship of food and my body to food and my mind. I know when my mental health is bad, my IBS will always be worse, that pesky gut-brain axis I mentioned in the first episode. And the best way to tackle this is extra care from both sides. So the grounding and well-being tips we've been touching on so far, but also putting food into my tummy I know it can digest easily and won't make the effects of stress worse, as tempting as it is to fill it with greasy takeaways and fizzy drinks after a tough day. I also find the self-care practice of eating well helps my mental health, so it's a positive loop all round. I feel much happier with myself, unlike I've more successfully adulted after a week of fresh cooking where I've stuck to my weekly meal plan.
And if the mental health benefits weren't enough to sell you on it, there are also positive physical benefits to be had from giving your body the nutrients that it craves. Your skin and eyes will look brighter and your hair shinier. Another good side effect from my interest in nutrition has led to me discovering the joy of growing my own veg. And it's a hobby that really ticks so many wellbeing boxes. It gets you out in the fresh air, exercising, a hit of vitamin D from the sunshine, and delicious organic food.
I can vouch to you lovely listeners how amazing Kirsty's skin is, so if that's not an advert for healthy eating, I don't know what is.
Oh, thanks, Nikki.
And I also love to grow veggies. Gardening is a great hobby for mental health, as you said, but I find it so much more rewarding knowing I'll get something useful at the end of it, especially if it's a use that I get to eat. Growing your veg can have varying success, and it's definitely a trial and error endeavour, especially with our unpredictable UK weather at the moment. The things I've personally had the most consistent success with, for anyone looking to give it a go, are salad plants, so your lettuces, rocket, spinach, and from my experience, homegrown rocket tastes so, so good. This year, I also had a very successful runner bean crop, which not only tastes good, but I think the cream flowers on the winding vine makes it a particularly beautiful vegetable plant to grow too. So if you're concerned about having an aesthetically pleasing vegetables to grow, that's a good one to start with. In lockdown, I also got much more into growing from scraps rather than seeds, which not only costs less, but is really great for the environment. I had the most success with planting old garlic segments or potatoes on the way out that otherwise we were destined for the dustbin. And a few months later, you then get a whole new crop you can eat. But next year, I also plan on trying other scrap growing methods like planting the end of chopped celery or lettuce to encourage the growth of new leaves. With all that being said, it's time to welcome our first ever guest, Ruth.
Hey Ruth, it is amazing to have you here with us today. So I know you through work, but for our listeners, can you introduce yourself and maybe tell us an interesting fact about you?
Hi, yeah, so hi everyone, I'm Ruth. An interesting fact. So I'm a writer, and as a writer, I reckon that if you want to create an interesting character, the thing to do is to give them two values and make those things in conflict. So for me, I write a blog about inclusion and diversity. I'm a feminist. I'm also big into like sci-fi and steampunk events. So this makes me a feminist who owns about 27 corsets.
That is a very interesting fact. I like Cool. So we've invited you here today to have a bit of a chat about nutrition, because I know there's a couple of different angles that you've got a lot to say on this. I'm first going to hand over to Kirsty, who is also a vegetarian, so you guys can have a little bit of a chat about that.
So I was just wondering if you could share with our listeners your journey with food and what were the reasons that led you to adopting the vegetarian or vegan diet that you have today?
Yeah, and I mean, vegetarian or vegan is kind of the question because I'm sort of somewhere in between the two. But so I first started to go vegetarian when I was about seven, and I mean the reasons for going vegetarian are kind of some of the reasons you'd expect from a seven-year-old. Like my favourite aunt was a vegetarian, and therefore I thought it was really cool. So that was kind of the first reason. But also, I mean, one of my earliest memories, I think, which means it must have started sooner than that. I think I would have been in nursery. And I remember coming home to my mum and saying, "Oh, mum, it was terrible. They took us to this farm park, and the farmer was there with us in the cow shed, telling us about how the cows were going to get turned into burgers. And the cows were right there listening to everything she said."
Oh.
My mum had to explain that cows do not speak English. So I think
Still, though.
probably there was something from an early stage. And then so I got to about sort of 17-ish. I'd been more or less vegetarian for a long time. I think with so many of these things, you end up kind of phasing it in. So for ages I was vegetarian, but if we went to the Chinese, I'd still have sweet and sour pork balls because they were just so good. So I kind of went full vegetarian when I was a teenager, and then I was kind of thinking, well, I've been vegetarian since I was really young. I'd kind of forgotten some of the reasons that I went vegetarian in the first place, and I thought, you know, is this still for me? And so I started researching more into vegetarianism and animal welfare and stuff. And actually, I went completely the opposite way, and I went fully vegan rather than deciding not to be a vegetarian anymore. And part of that was to do with I'd seen some quite distressing videos about the egg industry and how, for the egg industry to work, you basically have to kind of destroy male chicks. And a lot of stuff like that, where I just felt like, you have this image in your head of like your lovely little chickens that you have in your garden, and you keep them as pets, and they lay eggs. And maybe I'd be all right with that, but I felt like the industry, I thought, was just seemed too cruel for me. That said, so one of the other reasons that I have the diet that I do is I have a condition that's known as painful bladder syndrome. It's also known as interstitial cystitis. That's more in the United States. And that is partly exacerbated by certain foods. So one of those foods, unfortunately, is tomato. Trying to be a vegan who doesn't eat tomato is pretty challenging. It means that I'm not fully vegan. I kind of give myself a bit of a break, and I'll have the odd bit of cheese or milk, just because otherwise I find it very difficult to cook things that I can eat.
So I'm the same, like I'll still eat like eggs from like my friend's chickens that he has in his backyard. I won't buy them for the shop anymore, but I think I saw that same video you probably saw. Forks over knives, I think, or one of those documentaries. But yeah, I'd say I'm the same. I'm kind of halfway between veggie and
Vigish.
Oh, I like that, vegish. So other than obviously the limited food choices you've had, or having to put more thought into your recipes and your meals. Are there anything else that you found, or is there anything else that you found hard when you were making the change to vegetarian or attempting to adopt more of a vegan diet?
Yeah, I think with both, and you know, if anyone was thinking of going vegetarian or vegan, you don't have to do it cold turkey. Excuse the pun. you know, I think when I went vegetarian, like I said, I kind of phased it in. Some of the, you know, some stuff was really easy. Like I mean, I was a kid, so like proper steak or pork chops or whatever, I was not interested in the slightest. Turkey, dinosaurs, all about them. It's absolutely fine to do things a bit at a time and take it over and, you know, keep some of the things that you particularly enjoy and cut others out. And that still has a massive benefit to the environment and everything else. More recently, I found out that I do actually have an intolerance to milk and egg, which has meant that I've had to go slightly more vegan than I was before. There are some things that are really easy, like, you know, compared to 10 years ago, the amount of things like dairy-free milks available is just crazy. I mean, when I was first vegan, I had to have soya milk, which anyone who's tried it will know it's not the tastiest thing in the world.
Can manage. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like so many things, you get used to it after a while. But yeah, I'm really glad that I can now have like oat milk and coconut milk and all these alternatives. The thing that is difficult, I think, with being vegan is it's a lot harder, not maybe not so much now, but definitely in the past, to cook things that are very quick. The other thing I found is, so having gone vegan again recently, I found that I was hungry a lot, and I realized that it was because with me living with someone else who isn't vegan, who has their own kind of preferences, the amount of protein that I was getting into my diet was probably too low. But one thing that was recommended to me that I found really helpful, so somebody recommended to me vegan protein powders, and I'd heard this before and I really reacted against it because I had just this image of, you know, guys who walk into the gym who look like they've got two big barrels under their arms and walk sideways. I kind of had that image in my head, but somebody suggested one that's 100% hemp protein, so there's no weird chemicals or anything in it, it's just powdered hemp. And I found that just having one or two of those with a smoothie or with some milk or something a day has made a huge difference, and it's amazing how much that increases your protein. And I found that having done that, I'm a lot less hungry. And obviously, if I were a really good vegan who were doing this properly, I wouldn't need to have that because I'd be getting pulses and all those kind of things into my diet. But as it is, I'm busy. I don't necessarily have the time to cook proper dinners, and sometimes I'm lazy and I'll just have cereal. So that's helpful for me anyway.
That's a really good tip. Really good.
That's really interesting. I've tried like hemp seeds before in smoothies, like blended them up in the Nutribullet, and I've seen the hemp powder, but I've never tried it. So I might give that one a go.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's, again, it's not like the tastiest thing. It's all right. I mean, it tastes just like hemp seeds, basically. But I'll have it with, like, I'll get the chocolate soya milk or something like that, and I'll mix it in. Or I'll get some, like, smoothie in a bottle and mix it in with that. It's, like, really handy.
That's really good. And just going back to what you said about the fact that your husband has got a different diet to you, I was wondering what it was like kind of at meal times. Do you kind of try and cook similar meals and just do a vegan version, and then does he eat meat mostly, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I mean, he's really good and very open-minded with food, and he's really not bothered at all by us being vegan. So we'll cook dinner together, and dinner will be usually a vegan meal. And you know, he's not bothered where, like, he wants to cook up some chicken on the side or anything. He always says that with, like, takeaways, he much prefers like a curry that's vegetable based, because he feels that when you get the meat curry, you just get the sauce and the meat, and you don't get the nice vegetables in there, particularly with something like Thai. So that's easy. The only thing that's difficult is he's not such a big fan of, like, the lentils and things like that. So we do tofu and we do other things. The thing he said he finds most difficult, rather than the veganism, is the no tomatoes. And I have to say, that is my absolute most hated thing is not being able to have tomatoes. I can't tell you how much I miss just being able to make like a simple red pasta sauce. But
that's it, it's just full space for so much tomato. So
Yes, and hence why, you know, I'll, if I go out to a restaurant or I go to someone's house, I'll often have something with dairy in. And I think, you know, some people I think can be very kind of almost like indoctrinating about veganism. And you get these kind of arguments around, oh, should you be able to have honey? Are you a proper vegan if you, you know, have cheese at Christmas? I don't know. But I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that just cutting this stuff down has a huge impact, you know, personally and for the environment. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Yeah, so true.
I completely agree. Like when I first went vegetarian, I think I was a bit of those, a bit preachy to people. And I wasn't even a vegan, just as a vegetarian. I'd be like, how can you say that you love animals when a couple of years before that, I was that person that was doing that. And then as time went on and I realised that I didn't find it as easy to, or when I tried to go vegan and it just, you know, I stayed vegetarian. And at that point I thought like, we spend too much time judging each other and putting labels on things. And like you said, it takes the focus away from like health and like the ethics of it is like the most important thing. So even if you're doing something small, like you said, like that's, it's always a step in the right direction. And I think, you know, no one could be perfect and there's no point, you know, sometimes I think it puts people off even trying.
It's interesting, like particularly over the last few years, people ask me about it a lot more. And I think, you know, people get to a place in their life where they might start to want to think about it. And if they do, then they're going to reach out and ask the questions. It doesn't help to shove it down people's throats. Again, I guess pun unintended.
So with the changes that you have made to your diet, what are the biggest health effects or benefits that you've noticed?
Yeah, so when I first went vegan as a teenager, at that time, I didn't know that I did have intolerances to milk and egg. And actually, like milk intolerances particularly are really common. And I realised that from going vegan, I'd suddenly had loads more energy. I didn't feel tired all the time. I just sort of felt a lot better and more confident in myself. So that was a big one. I mean, another thing kind of on that topic, which is more related to so my medical condition, it's obviously it takes a really long time. You know, I know that Nikki, you've got a condition that's affected by your diet as well. And it is really time consuming to work out what it is that is contributing to your to your symptoms. And I didn't go through the elimination diet. I just started to notice patterns around what I was eating and noticing that after having tomatoey dishes, I was maybe feeling a bit worse than otherwise. And so I cut that out.
So you kind of said that you you worked out the tomatoes by process of elimination. Is that how you also found out that's this painful bladder system? Painful bladder syndrome, sorry. Is that how you found out what that was, or did you have to go down the long and weary process that I know well of doctor's appointments and medical procedures, and how did you get to your kind of your diagnosis?
Oh yeah, I mean it took me about 10 years to get a proper diagnosis.
Yeah.
And it's so painful bladder syndrome, sorry, affects, I think it's about 1% of women, so it's much more common with women than with men, which with so many other medical conditions that mostly affects women means that it's really under researched considering how many people it affects. And I was going back and forth to doctors constantly. They kept on testing me for the same thing. So they kept on testing me for a urine infection every time I went in. And every time I'd say, you did this last time, we've ruled this out, this isn't what it is. And every time they'd say, no, we're going to try again and just see. And eventually, over a period of years, I started to notice more and more trends around the pain. So for example, it was more likely in the lead up to my period. It was more likely after, you know, certain foods like caffeine, alcohol, tomatoes. And I just remember one day I'd been looking for stuff for ages and I hadn't got anywhere. And one day I just typed into Google, bladder pain, period, tomatoes, caffeine, hit search, and then this thing came up called interstitial cystitis, or it's now known in the UK as painful bladder syndrome. And it was still several years because I then went back to the doctor and said, right, I've put my symptoms into Google. It really looks like I have this thing called interstitial cystitis. And they said, oh, no, you shouldn't be Googling your symptoms. You know, Google doesn't know what it's talking about. And they kept on, you know, just carrying on with all this stuff. Saw one doctor, female doctor, who was a specialist. And she came in and she said, have you Googled your symptoms? And I said, yes. And she said, what do you think you have? And I said, pretty sure I've got interstitial cystitis. And she said, yep, that's exactly what you've got.
And going through all of that, did that change your relationship with food? So, you know, becoming vegetarian, vegan, that's a choice. That's something that you decided that you wanted to do for ethical reasons. But when it's something like tomatoes or for both of us, dairy that you love so much, did it change how you feel about food when you suddenly can't have it? You know, your body just can't handle it.
It's a really good question. I don't know. I think for so many people, there's a kind of a link between kind of food and control, and being in a place where I couldn't eat the foods that I wanted to made me feel quite out of control, and that was upsetting. Yeah. I think I have got through it by finding alternatives that I can sit and enjoy. So for example, I basically don't eat, don't drink alcohol, but I do get through a hell of a lot of chocolates. So that helps. Unfortunately, that's also slightly a trigger, but I've had to just, of all the triggers, I've just had to pick one and say, okay, well, I'm not going to have alcohol, I'm not going to have caffeine, but I can't cut out chocolate. And, you know, finding alternatives, like I couldn't have hot chocolate because it was too sugary, but I managed to find some kind of pucker evening milky type drinks that were vegan and didn't have any trigger foods in. It just takes a while to find these things, but in time you do kind of get there, and you can talk to other people who have similar experiences, and you do pick up these things, and that makes it a lot easier.
Have you ever tried cacao? I don't know if, because you love your chocolate, cacao drinking chocolate, and you can make your own homemade hot chocolate with it. Basically, it's like cocoa powder, but before it's like heated and processed, so it's still got all of like the nutrients and the antioxidants in it that chocolate could be really good for.
Oh, amazing. That's my Christmas present to myself sorted. Thank you. Definitely give that a go.
And while we're on the subject of yummy foods, what is your favourite meal to cook?
I really like, well, I love things that I can cook quickly. Mm-hmm. I made a really good curry yesterday, which was like a sweet potato and chickpea curry. I've discovered a couple of cookbooks that have really saved my life, because it's so difficult to find vegan cookbooks that aren't all tomato based. So the two I've found, one is called The Green Roasting Tin, and that is fantastic. It's like one pot, but it's all in a roasting tin that you put in your oven. So you chop stuff up, you whack it in the roasting tin, you stick it in the oven, you leave it, it comes out, it's a proper meal. The other one that someone recommended to me, the cookbook is fantastic, and it's Deliciously Ella Quick and Easy. All of the recipes were things where I either had it in my cupboard and my regular shop already, or it was something that I didn't usually buy, but it was tinned or in a jar or something where you can leave it at the back of your cupboard until you need it and it's not going to go off. So that's really good as well. And actually the curry I made yesterday was from her book. I think she also has an app, which I haven't tried, but may also be helpful. So yes, anything where I don't have to do a lot.
I'm good, definitely answer. All for that. So I know some people might be thinking, you know, people that aren't vegetarian or vegan and that just love their meat, Christmas is around the corner. Surely on Christmas Day, like, you know, how can you enjoy a Christmas meal without having meat on your plate? So what does your Christmas dinner look like?
I mean, I feel like what people actually love about Christmas dinner tends to be all the trimmings on the sides, and it just, you know, surrounds the meat. So, I mean, okay, this is not vegan, but at Christmas, I will give myself a little bit more leeway. So I make my own Yorkshire puddings. I love those. I also sometimes I make sweet Yorkshire puddings where you you put the Yorkshire pudding batter in and then you put like a frozen mini chocolate bar inside it and you have it with ice cream. That's amazing. My main thing tends to be a nut roast, which I know is a bit cliched, but it's basically like extreme stuffing. And everyone loves stuffing. And if I have a nut roast, like my husband will still have loads of it as well, because it's just fantastic. And also last year, they brought out vegan pigs in blankets, which I really enjoy.
So what I'm hearing is that we're both coming round yours for Christmas dinner.
Yeah, we can fit two more in.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your time, Ruth. This has been honestly brilliant. You've given so many useful tips for our listeners, for people either looking into vegetarian and veganism or also going on their own kind of diet, allergy, health journey. So it's been fantastic all round.
Food Wars. We live in a time when ingredient lists are longer than your arm, and a lot of our fruit and vegetables are sprayed with chemicals and pesticides when they're being grown. The amount of people suffering from food allergies and intolerances is also on the rise. And without all the dodgy added ingredients to our foods, sometimes simple foods that you've eaten for years can disagree with your body. Nikki, I know in your case, it happened to sadly be your favourite food, cheese.
It did. So I've been on a real journey with my diet. I was diagnosed with IBS nearly 10 years ago, and at that point I did a very simplified version of the elimination diet, so it was over 6 months, but it was kind of just a cut out sugary, all sugary food for the first month, or gluten for the next, and just seeing after each one if it did improve my IBS or not at all. And at the end, both myself and the doctor decided it was primarily stress related, so it was all kind of for nothing, but that was fine. Mm-hmm. And then starting about 7 years ago, I had this increasing issue where I choke on my food, which might sound harmless enough, maybe a bit annoying, but the issue was food was just getting so trapped in my esophagus. It would stay stuck and it wouldn't budge. No amount of sipping at drinks or fizzy drinks could shift it. And I handled it the way a typical person in their mid-20s dealing with an undiagnosed mental illness disorder handles most things, and just ignored it and hoped it would go away on its own. This went on for years, and I had, within a year, two quite close together overnight stints in hospital, both times ending up hooked up to a drip, as it was so stuck I couldn't even sip water without my body instantly trying to go back into throwing up mode again to shift this food. So it was after that I thought, maybe I should start trying to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, I remember 1 year for my birthday when we were out for dinner, and I think it was pasta with steak in it, and then you, after a few mouthfuls, you vanished into the bathroom, and then suddenly, before I knew it, you were being rushed off by your boyfriend at the time.
Yeah, no, that was a really horrid one, and that was actually the last time that that was the time that I realised I needed to do something. And the worst thing, it was such a good meal and I only got to have a few bites of it. Mm-hmm. But after 24 hours of throwing up that time, it culminated in 2 days of me an A&E, hooked up to a drip, and I realised I just had enough. So I went through a number of different unpleasant investigations and biopsies and was diagnosed with enophilic esophagitis, which, easier to say, is EOE, which was it's an allergic reaction that happens in my throat, causing it to swell, and it kind of gets like little bumps, which is why food gets more likely to get stuck on there when I try and swallow. So at this point I had my second experience of the elimination diet, but this was very much the full heavy duty version. So that's starting by removing the 6 most common allergens from your diet. So milk, which is the allergen term for dairy, gluten, soya, shellfish, eggs and nuts. Just as a disclaimer, there are a couple of different versions of the elimination diet, so if this sounds different to one that you've been on or you're on at the moment, I'm sure it's fine, but do just check with your GP if you're at all worried. The idea is that 6-week intervals, you then reintroduce each thing one at a time, starting with the least likely to cause a reaction and ending with the most, which I was told from the start were gluten and then dairy. Dairy being a 50% chance that that's what would be causing the allergy, because so many people are intolerant or allergic to it. Before each reintroduction, I had to have one of my least favourite life experiences, a gastroscopy, which is when they put the tube down through your throat to have a look at your esophagus and then to check if the swelling had gone back.
Oh, that sounds really intense. I was off travelling at the time that this was all going on. So how did you find that process? It sounds really rough.
Well, I was told it would take 6 months, but due to staff shortages in the gastro department and multiple occasions where for some reason I'd just fallen off the waiting list, so I thought I was waiting for a month to have my appointment booked in for the next gastroscopy, so doing my restriction until that point. And when I phoned to check, I'd just fallen off the list. I wasn't even waiting anymore. So the entire time you were spending exploring Southeast Asia, which I think was almost a year.
8 months, I think. Yeah, 8-9 months.
Yeah, I was there just going through this process, basically trying to relearn how to eat from such a restricted menu. And it was then that I realised how many random ingredients are in food you buy at the supermarket. So soya is in nearly everything. I didn't realise it's kind of used as like a thickener and a salty flavouring. So if you do manage to find some kind of sauce that doesn't have soya, guaranteed it would have dairy or gluten. So I had to just start making everything from scratch. And when you leave the dietitian's office for the first time after that first appointment where they tell you what they need to do next, you just get this booklet that lists out everything you can't eat with a couple of suggestions of alternatives. And a lot of it involves things like baking your own bread from scratch, which I said from the start, I'm not going to do that. And it just felt completely overwhelming. I'm not the fussiest eater, but I'm very much a creature of habit when it comes to cooking. And that was the hardest part for me, that relearning. And mealtimes went from being a highlight of my day to something that was just stressful and unenjoyable. I actually lost quite an unhealthy amount of weight during that year and had quite a few deficiencies because I just wasn't finding ways of getting everything my body needed into my diet. I've always been one of those people that just finds it hard to eat a meal if I'm not enjoying what I've got on my plate. I can't just mind over matter and get on with it. So I was pretty much living off carrot sticks and hummus for the first 6 months, which might sound healthy, but it's definitely not a balanced diet.
Oh, I love carrots and, well, I love hummus and anything that goes in hummus, but living off that and not much else would really affect me. Like, I don't know how you did that, to be honest.
I honestly don't remember ever being so exhausted in my life. Food really is fuel, and it just shows how much you do need that balance. And it's also so tied for mental health with me as well. So the process ended up taking over a year from start to finish. And that year definitely contributed to me going on antidepressants a few months after. Because food is such a simple way of finding joy each day. And if you're robbed of that, you realise like it has such an impact. Something I'd really recommend for anyone about to start this journey or experiencing any gut issues that they want to get to the root of is investing in a Tummy Diaries journal from the amazing Lottie Dryan, founder of You've Got This, which I've mentioned before. There are daily pages to log not only what you eat and drink each day, but also the ways you've moved your body or how your mood's been that day, how your mental health's going. Because she recognises diet can be one part of a much bigger picture when it comes to gut health. This isn't an ad or anything, I just would really recommend it. And I bought one last year and I so wish that I'd had something like that with me for the earlier stages of the food journey and particularly going through the elimination diet. Also, I would really recommend joining the You've Got This Facebook group, which is an open group for anyone that's got any kind of gut health issues going on. It's such an open community. I've never heard people talk so openly about poop. And they honestly have such a wealth of experience between everyone in it, of going through all the different sorts of diets, finding recipes that are elimination diet friendly, FODMAP diet friendly. And every, you know, between all the people on there, you're going to find someone that's gone through a similar journey to you.
That sounds really supportive, and I know you've mentioned that community to me kind of over the last year or so and how it has really helped you through your IBS. And so the end result after your investigations was that you couldn't have dairy, wasn't it? How did that go down?
Oh, not good. I said from the very start, I'd be okay with it being any of the allergens apart from dairy. "Cheese is my life" is a genuine quote that I said to the dietitian. I remember telling her when she phoned to give me my results, but I get boxes of cheese for Valentine's Day, and the cheese board is the best part of Christmas dinner. All my favourite foods were based around cheese, like pizza, pasta baked, baked camembert was my go-to at restaurants, or nachos, and even things you take for granted have dairy in them. So pastries like croissants, most soups have dairy to make them creamy. And weirdly, a lot of brand of crisps have dairy in them. So that's made going to things like house parties or having picky bits before dinner at people's a little bit more difficult. I was sobbing my heart out when she called to tell me the result to come back, and it was dairy that had caused the allergic reaction again, which is the very last thing I'd reintroduced. It just felt like the end of the world at that point. And it's such a hard thing to realise that just because you love a certain type of food, it doesn't mean it loves you back.
Oh, it's so typical that that would be the one thing that it turned out to be. Like, I used to say I'm addicted to cheese because I would literally, it would be the first thing that I'd have when I'd get in from work, would be a big block of cheddar. And when I used to say that, I was kind of joking, like, oh yeah, I'm addicted to cheese. But it actually turns out that I might not have been far from the truth. So according to Dr. Neil Barnard, who runs the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, he explained that cheese is so addictive as it contains this protein called casein. So casein creates caseomorphins when the dairy is broken down in your body, and caseomorphins attach to the brain's opiate receptors, and they cause a calming effect much in the same way that heroin and morphine do. So it's no wonder that you found it so hard to stop eating cheese, and that most vegans say that this is the hardest thing that they found to give up. Another thing that is also super addictive is sugar. I try to limit the amount of added sugar I have nowadays, not always successfully, but I do really notice that I have sugar crashes and mood swings if I do have too much of it, or too much chocolate or fizzy drinks and things like that. So, and also the more I have it, the more, you know, within a few days I find I'm back in that habit of having it every day, and it's so hard to cut out either the chocolate or the fizzy drinks. Another thing I used to be fine with, but my body hasn't agreed with in the last couple of years, is tea. So if I was having more than like 2 cups of tea a day, I would find that it would affect my bladder and have me rush into the loo all the time, almost like a mild feeling of cystitis. And I looked into this, and it turns out that the tannins in tea, so the same thing that kind of stain your teeth if you have a lot of it, they give it that dark colouring, can actually aggravate your bladder wall and make it overactive, giving you the sense of urgency that you need to wee all the time, even though you don't really need to. And I love my tea, like I could drink it all day long. So now, knowing that I can only have like 1 cup a day at a push, I have found that a bit hard.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that. I only drink herbal teas now, as I found caffeine does impact my IBS. I'm kind of used to it now, and I do quite enjoy my herbal teas, but I was really shocked at how tough that initial transition was. I had caffeine withdrawal headaches for days, maybe even weeks, when I was trying to come off them, and it is scary how addictive some of these things are. Even knowing what foods trigger me, make me feel physically or emotionally worse, I still find it hard to eat healthy sometimes. It's just such a catch-22 that the more stressed or burnt out you are, the more likely your mind and body craves that quick, happy fixes like takeaways or sugary drinks or snacks and treats. I know my diet and having balanced meals is the first thing to go when my mental health isn't great, so it is something that I'm working on. And for me, in times of stress, I know it's when my tummy is more sensitive, it's when my IBS is more likely to be triggered. So the last thing it needs is all this unhealthy, greasy food. But I do also think it's a balancing act, because sometimes you need to treat yourself, give in to those cravings, have the cheeky takeaway, have the chocolate, or life is just miserable. But maybe have that awareness at the same time that a cheeky takeaway might make you happy, but it's not going to make you feel more energized the next day.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You've got to have a treat sometimes. Everything in moderation, because you don't want to make yourself miserable. I actually had a Thai takeaway earlier, and it was a vegan pad Thai, and it was so good, and it was absolutely guilt-free, because if you're going to have a treat, there's no point beating yourself up about it, because I think the actual emotion of guilt and feeling that in your body is almost as bad as unhealthy food. So if you do have a treat, like, enjoy it, appreciate it, and be thankful for it. Don't, you know, as soon as you have it, think, oh, I shouldn't have had that, or I've fallen off the wagon. Like, just enjoy it for what it is, and try to have everything in moderation, but don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, I do quite easily fall into the takeaway and then guilt loop, which is just so unhelpful. But something that really helps me is the idea of weekly meal planning that I kind of mentioned, I touched on earlier. So on a Sunday or a Monday, I've got a tradition where I sit down, I've got a wonderful Inspired Stories planner, which I love. It's got space for your weekly goals. But not only do I plan out my goals for the coming week, my to-do list, but I also plan out what I'm going to have for each meal each day, which might sound a little bit extreme, but particularly when my mental health's bad, I've realised one of the most common excuses I give myself to just grab something quick but unhealthy is because I don't have the mental energy by the end of the day to think about what to cook. But if you've already made those decisions earlier when you're feeling fresh and kind of in that planning mindset, it is so much easier to stick to.
I love that. That's something I mean to do every week. And every Sunday, and I always think, right, I'm going to write my shopping list and plan for the week. And I don't often do it. But when I do, and when I've got a fridge full of ingredients where I know nothing's going to go to waste and things like that, it makes me feel, it just frees up like space in your mind as well. When it comes to like at the end of a long, busy day, you know what your meal's going to be for that day, rather than, oh, look in the fridge and just feeling like I can't be bothered to cook, or I don't know, you know, just not feeling motivated to be creative. It's so much easier when you've got it there ready to go.
Vitamins and vitality.
So when you're making changes to your diet, it's important to take time to research and work out what new foods or supplements you might need to add in to balance out the things that you are no longer having. So when I first went vegetarian, it was before I went travelling, and I realised the main thing that I would probably be lacking by not having meat anymore would be iron. So I started taking this, it's called Super Green Powder, and you can get various different types of it, but it's basically a combination usually of spirulina and moringa and chlorella, if I can say it, and different types of algae. So it's full of like proteins, and sometimes I put it in my morning smoothie, and 2 teaspoons of it would be, I think, 20% of your recommended daily need of iron. But then when I went traveling, all that went out the window. I didn't take my green powder with me, and I just started eating whatever I wanted. Lots of pad thais almost every day in Thailand, which were delicious, but I didn't pay much thought or attention to the fact that I might be lacking things like iron and zinc because I wasn't having those extra foods that I'd added in or supplements before I left. And then I think it was about 6 months, so I was away for 8 months, and then I think it was about 6 months after I came back from travelling, I just felt really low on energy, and this lasted on and off for about a year, just getting really exhausted really easily. I lost quite a bit of weight as well, which I didn't realise at the time until I looked back on photos. Kind of headaches, my anxiety started to creep back in as well, more than usual. They tested me for iron and my iron levels were fine. So that was the only thing they really thought to test me for, being a vegetarian. And they couldn't find anything else in my blood test results. And I thought, something isn't right. Like, I used to be so full of energy, especially since being vegetarian. Like, what's changed? And I started to do a lot of research into this, into my symptoms, and if there was anything as a vegetarian that I might be missing. And then I came across a vitamin called B12. And it is the one vitamin and minerals that is hard to get just on a plant-based diet. So things like salmon and oily fish are really high in it. But I definitely think that is what was causing my low mood and low energy at the time. So I would recommend vegetarians and vegans, especially if you're having symptoms like I was, get a blood test. You can just ask your GP for one, for B12, zinc and iron, maybe a year or so, or for once a year to start with when you're first changing your diet, just to make sure you're not missing out on anything. If you wanted to learn more about the different vitamins and minerals that your body needs, then I would recommend going to Dr. Michael Greger's website called www.nutritionfacts.org. There's loads of free info on there and videos about the different vitamins and minerals, and also studies into the positive and negative health effects of a plant-based diet. Obviously, it's best if we can get as much of our vitamins from the natural food source. But having said that, there is one vitamin you should definitely consider taking at this time of year, vitamin D3. Those of us living in the UK don't make enough vitamin D between October and March due to the shorter daylight hours and how low the sun's rays are. Vitamin D is often overshadowed by vitamin C when it comes to fighting off infection, but there is a reason why, as well as spending more time inside, more people get ill during the winter months. Again, going back to Dr. Greger's website, you can find a vitamin D map. It basically shows you how much daily sunlight you should be trying to get, or if that's not possible, how much you should be supplementing with at each time of year, depending on where you live in the world and how close to the equator.
My dad kindly bought me a load of vitamin D during lockdown because he heard how it can help fight off infection, and a lot of people started taking it around the pandemic. But I can say it's also helped with my energy. Though so much has changed over the last year, it's hard to pinpoint the exact triggers to health changes.
Let food be thy medicine. Vitamin content in our food is not the same as it was 100 years ago. This is because back then food was grown organically without chemicals, and it wasn't flown halfway across the world before it made it to your plate. Because of the changes in farming practices and the way that our food is grown, some researchers suggest that to get the vitamin and mineral content that we used to get back then in 5 a day, we actually now need to eat 15 fruit and veg a day, which seems impossible.
I didn't know that. I struggled just getting the 5 in.
Exactly. It's no wonder that a lot of symptoms and illnesses are caused or worsened by vitamin and mineral deficiencies. Doctors only receive between 10 to 24 hours of nutrition training in over 5 to 6 years of medical school. The host of BBC4's The Food Programme, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, told a story about how his baby son fell very ill and listless when they were on holiday with the family. He said at the time he felt so helpless and guilty, as after checking the symptoms, he had no idea what was wrong with his son or how he could help him. They went to a local hospital, I think it was in Spain at the time, and it turned out to be a calcium deficiency, which was causing his son's symptoms. And he had no idea because he'd never had the training on it.
That's so horrid. I was feeling really rough actually when I first started my elimination diet without dairy, and it turned out it was a calcium deficiency. We're so lucky these days that there's so many alternative options to things like almond and coconut milks, which have a lot of vitamins and minerals like calcium and vitamin C added in, so you can still get those, but it's so worth being aware of, and also being aware of the symptoms of not having enough of a certain vitamin or mineral. I remember my nan was a celiac. She had 2 options then of bread she could choose from that were gluten-free, and they were both so sweet and chemically tasting, they can't have been good for her.
Yeah, we're so lucky with the amount of options that we have these days. Even compared to, say, 4 or 5 years ago, there are so many more options for veggie and vegan alternative foods in the supermarket. Also, if your body is craving something and it's not caused by an addiction to, say, something like sugar, it could be because you are lacking something that is found in that food. As I mentioned, when I had low B12, not that I was aware of it at the time, I would find myself going around Asda, doing my shop, and all I could think about was salmon. I hadn't eaten salmon in about 3 or 4 years, but it was all I could think about walking around that shop, literally to the point where I wanted to like grab a packet of smoked salmon and rip it open there and then. And I had no idea why I was craving it so much. So I do really think if your body is craving something, you probably do need it, or at least if you're not going to have it, look into getting a blood test or something, or work out if it is something that you're lacking.
That's the reason that pregnant women get cravings, isn't it? Like their body's literally screaming at them at something that they need, and they need it now. So what healthy foods are in your repertoire, Kirsty? I know you do much better at this than I do.
So there are a few things I try and get in the habit of having every day. So Brazil nuts, I literally have 3 or 4, like a handful in the afternoon. and they contain a lot of selenium. You don't need more than 3 or 4 because you can, as we said earlier, have too much of a good thing. And selenium is another really important mineral that helps support your immune system. I also try to get in the habit of having my super green powder from Indigo Herbs in the morning. And that was the one that I mentioned in our interview with Ruth earlier. I know some of this probably sounds really unappetizing. And if your taste buds aren't used to it, to be honest, to start with, when I started to have it, it did taste like pond water, and it does look a bit like pond water. But I promise, the more often you start to have these other types of foods, the more used your taste buds get to it. So, for example, I used to like milk chocolate. Really had to kind of train myself to like dark chocolate because I found it too bitter, but I knew it was healthier for you and had more nutrients in it. And after a few weeks, I got used to it. And then after months of having it, I really enjoyed it. And then going back to having milk chocolate again, it tasted so sugary. And it's funny how your taste buds can adjust over time.
It's like for me, I train myself to stop drinking Coke all the time and start having Diet Coke. And at first I found it tasted so weird. And then the other day I drank a can of normal Coke and was like, how did I used to drink this? It almost felt like my teeth were like getting thicker from all the sugar. I know exactly what you mean.
That's the thing. Like, you might even get to the point if you have enough of them where your body actually starts to crave the healthier foods. And trust me, this is coming from a girl who used to eat Play-Doh at play school. And would also turn her nose up at anything for dinner that wasn't tinned baked beans and sausages. So you can change your taste buds over time. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but you get full up much quicker on nutrient-dense foods as your body is getting what it needs. Whereas with junk food and snacks, you can feel like you have a bottomless stomach and never get full up. That's because your tummy doesn't send the full signal to your brain, as it's not getting the good nutrients that it wants. So it just keeps wanting you to put things in your mouth until it finally gets there.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
And the final thing I have a lot of every day, very simple, but it's water. If you make one change to your health, let it be to start your day with a pint or two of water. Give your body the chance to hydrate after the 8 hours or so that it's gone without having any. It reduces acidity and inflammation and gets everything moving. Every cell in your body will thank you for having it, especially before you enjoy your morning cup of tea or coffee. And what about you, Nikki? Are there any healthy foods or foods that you know your body, mind and soul feel particularly thankful for when you eat them?
Can I say sushi?
Yeah.
But honestly, I don't know what it is. I always feel so mentally and physically energized after a good sushi dinner. Which isn't great for my bank balance. I'm beyond excited for the fact you're coming over this weekend, Kirsty, to order some sushi with me from my new local sushi restaurant.
Yep, I'm so looking forward to that. And it is good for your brain. All those omega-3s and 6s in the fish oil is so good for you and your skin. And that brings me on to the fact that the setting and the people that you share food with is just as important as the food itself. Sitting down for a nice sushi takeaway with your best friend or a good Christmas feast with friends and family is just as nutritious for your soul as soup or a salad. And Christmas dinner is so healthy, probably one of the easiest ways to get 5 of your 15 a day.
Yeah, exactly. A good family meal is a way of bonding and nurturing connections while also nurturing the body. So it's a win-win.
Definitely.
I don't think you can really talk about food without touching on the fact that so many people have really bad relationships with it. And I know I've been there. But no matter what, your body always deserves to eat. Always. Our society and social media have so much to answer for in terms of diet culture. And I could speak for another hour or so on this, but you guys would be well and truly sick of us. But there is a growing number of anti-diet social media accounts out there now that I personally have found really helpful. So if you are struggling with your relationship with food or body image, I'd really recommend checking out Lottie Dryan, Georgie Swallow, Midsize Magpie, Ashley Graham, or Make Love Not Diets. All of them are on Instagram, but there are many, many, many more out there if you start looking. Or find yourself a good community like You've Got This, where you can share your relationship with food and talk to like-minded people about anything you're going through. But please keep feeding yourselves, you beautiful people. And if you can't, do reach out and get help. Sadly, it's such a big issue these days that there are many, many specialists out there who can help you. And if you are unhappy with yourself, I promise you it's coming from the inside, not about the outside. There's no goal weight that you can get to which will suddenly make you feel worthy. Trust me, I've been there.
If you're wanting to learn more about anything we've discussed today and what you put into your body, I would recommend checking out the book 31 Day Food Revolution by Ocean Robbins.
Thank you for listening, beautiful people. Hopefully we've not left you feeling too hungry, and you'll get to enjoy some glorious food with your loved ones next week.
If you want to say hello or let us know what you thought about today's episode, you can find us on social media under Colour Me Happy with two E's in me and Holistic Kirsty, one word with no C. We also have an Instagram for our show called justbeing_podcast, or drop us an email at justbeing_podcast@hotmail.com.
Goodbye, lovely listeners. And until next time, always remember to just feed your body and your soul.
Join us next Thursday when we'll be discussing how to find the magic in everyday life.